Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Modern Retail Podcast. I'm Cale Guthrie Weissman, the editor-in-chief at Modern Retail, and I'm joined with Lauren Picasso, the founder and CEO of Cure Hydration. And I'm excited to just learn more about what's going on in the sort of sports beverage space, I guess you could say, although we'll talk all about that soon. But hey, Lauren, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Cale.
Yeah, of course. First, for those who don't know, why don't you give a little background about what Cure Hydration is?
Yeah, absolutely. Cure is an organic electrolyte mix. It's based on a formula that was originally developed by the World Health Organization that's proven to hydrate as effectively as an IV drip. But we use premium and organic ingredients that have no added sugar.
Got it. And how is it like packaged and presented? It comes in powder form, is that correct?
Exactly. So it's a powder drink mix that comes in a stick pack form that you just mix with water.
Okay, cool. I'm excited to go more into sort of how you developed all that. But could you just give a little background about yourself, sort of how you got into this space and what you're doing before?
Yeah, so my background is in e-commerce and retail. I've spent my career working in a few different e-commerce retailers like Rent the Runway and most recently Jet.com.
And so what made you, how did you go from being into Jet to then founding this company?
Great question. It really just started as a passion project. I was training for a triathlon a few years ago and would come back from my long workouts and get headaches and feel nauseous. And I realized I just needed a lot more electrolytes. So I needed to replace the sodium that I was losing during these workouts. And I just couldn't find an option on the market that wasn't full of added sugar and artificial ingredients. And so that's how I came up with the idea for Cure.
And you said it, so this is a WHO approved formula. Was this a formula that you and your colleagues created? How did you sort of come up with it?
Yeah, so I actually started doing a lot of research on Pedialyte. I saw that Pedialyte had become very popular with adults, especially for hungover adults. Half of their sales are actually from hungover adults.
I remember that in college very well.
So I saw that trend and saw that Pedialyte was also being used by a lot of athletes and noticed that it was a medical grade product. So I started researching the science behind Pedialyte and discovered the World Health Organization formula. And fortunately, there was a lot of research available online about this formula. It's been around for over 50 years, primarily in countries that suffer from severe dehydration, places that have issues with cholera, for example, but really until recently has been fairly underutilized in the United States. I think, you know, partially because dehydration isn't as big of an issue here. But I also felt that, you know, the ingredients really hadn't been updated for a while. Most of the other products in the market that follow the WHO formula use a base of cane sugar or sometimes like an alternative form of sugar like dextrose and then synthetic minerals. So I took the same science behind that WHO formula, but replaced it with organic coconut water and pink Himalayan salt.
Interesting. Did you find that sort of transitioning from working at Jet and then starting your own company, was it sort of a crash course in understanding the beverage industry and sourcing ingredients? How did you approach all of that?
Yeah, so that was totally new to me. So the world of e-commerce and marketing was familiar. So once we actually had a product ready to sell, that was a bit easier. But yeah, going down the path of finding a formulator and a manufacturer was totally new to me. So I spent a lot of time just talking to a lot of other founders. So started reaching out to any food founders that I knew, and then just one intro would lead to another until eventually I had at least a process or a playbook to follow.
Interesting. And so can you talk a little about sort of the first, how it became an idea into an actual product? So like what made you decide for it to be powdered form? How did you come up with all of those nuts and bolts?
Yeah. So I had a few key decisions. I knew that I wanted to follow the WHO formula and that I wanted to use organic ingredients. The next question was really about format, to your point. You know, should it be a drink, a powder, a tablet? I really liked powder as a format because coming from e-commerce, I realized that it was very lightweight and cheap to ship online. So at Jet, we sold a lot of bottled water, a lot of LaCroix, and I would just see the margins on those types of products and realize that we really could never sell a ready-to-drink online and be profitable. And so I like powder from a business perspective. But from a consumer perspective, I thought it was really interesting as well. As consumers are becoming much more environmentally conscious, powder just felt like a much better option. It uses a lot less plastic. Because it's lightweight, it leads to reduced shipping emissions. And really, at every stage of the life cycle, just uses a lot less energy, since it doesn't require refrigeration.
Is powder more difficult or different to formulate than a liquid? I'm sorry if that's a dumb question, but I've always wondered.
Yeah, it is, in some ways more difficult. It depends on the process. A lot of ready-to-drink products are actually, they actually start in powder form and then the water is just added. So it kind of just depends on the formulation. Powder is difficult for organic products. Most of the powder products out there are using additives and carriers so that the product doesn't cake. And we wanted to avoid any preservatives and use 100% pure fruit juices. So finding the right ingredients was definitely a challenge.
Interesting. Could you talk a little about sort of your business and growth model? Because your background is in e-commerce. You're definitely selling online, but you're also in other stores. So just sort of walk me through all that.
Yeah. So we launched last March, so just under 2 years old, originally just online. So we launched on our Shopify website, Amazon, and then expanded to Thrive Market as well. So last year, we were about 95% e-commerce. And then this year, we started to expand into mass retail in a pretty big way. So pre-pandemic, actually, we were very focused on premium retail. We were in a number of fitness studios. We had just launched in 75 airports. We were in Urban Outfitters. But post-pandemic, I really shifted gears and focused more on essential retailers, so grocery stores and pharmacies, stores where consumers were still shopping. And so that worked out really well. We ended up getting distribution in over 4,000 stores. So we recently launched in CVS, Whole Foods, and Walmart this year.
Wow. The premium retail, like that makes a lot of sense in terms of how you would market yourselves as a brand, because, it's sort of I'm in the store. This is a nice thing that I'll get. When you're a powder for a kind of drink that most people seek out, but perhaps with Gatorade, and you're in a CVS, how did you sort of approach that like shelving marketing aspect of things? Because people might not be looking for your product when they're in different parts of the store.
Yeah, this this category is challenging in that way, in that a customer comes into a store and they're thirsty or they're dehydrated, and likely the first place they're going to look is either in like the water section or the sports drink section. And this type of product is really spread out all over the store. So you find Pedialyte in the baby section. You find some of these types of products in a drink mix section. Sometimes it's in a supplement section. And so the key for us is honestly really just to get as many placements in the store as possible or to be in a really high traffic area of the store. In the case of CVS, we actually did a pilot with CVS last summer that did really well. And we actually were able to test different formats and different areas of the store. And so what they ended up rolling out was a freestanding fixture in the store. So that's been nice just from like a marketing and awareness perspective. People are walking around the store and they see this massive fixture with our branding on it. So it definitely draws the consumer in and is easy to find in the store.
What was the idea with Urban Outfitters? Like I'm always fascinated with the products that are non-clothes related in Urban Outfitters. So as a founder in a sort of beverage adjacent area, what was your thought about being in there?
Yeah, so Urban Outfitters is really interesting. They've really expanded their assortment over the past several years. And in a way, they're almost like a mini Sephora. So they have this massive health and wellness section and a number of beauty items as well. And so the shopping experience is really great. There's a lot of really cool and interesting brands, and it's all around checkout. So the idea is really that you're going to pick up one of these smaller items when you're shopping for clothes and just adding it to your basket.
Yeah, I've always found at Urban Outfitters, it's like they're the updated version of that section of like Marshalls. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where you're like going through and you're like, how the hell did this get here? But like Urban Outfitters is much more curated and not like falling off the back of a truck, for instance.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like back in the day, I feel like it was like all these really cool books and like little gadgets and things like that. But now with sort of the explosion, I guess, of health and wellness, they've really began to be pretty aggressive in that category.
So what was your thought about sort of what were your goals with entering into Urban Outfitters specifically? Is that just for brand awareness? Did the sales matter as much as, say, another physical retailer?
Yeah, so a lot of the premium retail that we launched in, including Urban Outfitters, was really for brand building. So when that all shut down during the pandemic, it wasn't like a massive blow to our revenue. But as far as discoverability, it was really important for us. So a lot of customers would discover us in an Urban Outfitters or discover us at their local fitness studio and then end up buying us online.
Mm-hmm. And so I feel like a lot of with the premium stuff is about, you know, finding your product and then going online. And then if you're in a Walmart, they're very much about staying in Walmart and buying at Walmart. Can you talk a little about how you've approached that specifically? Because I know Cure has a subscription program and you have a lot of your revenue comes from subscription. Is that a tension you sort of have when you're working in mass retail where they don't want people to go to your website really? They'd prefer people to just buy it in Walmart?
Yeah. And I would say they probably, you know, don't. Like a Walmart shopper, to your point, is going to keep shopping at Walmart because they're shopping there regularly. You know, nowadays they're shopping online or ordering ahead of time and picking up in store. So they have their preset of items that they're typically buying. So we don't necessarily, you know, want customers to convert over to our D2C site if they're loyal Walmart shoppers, because that would cannibalize our Walmart sales. And we don't really see that crossover too much anyways. Where we do see it is, you know, customers who discover us online. So maybe they discover us on Amazon on Thrive Market. And then once they decide that they really love the product, they come to our website and subscribe, because that's where they can get some extra perks in terms of competitive pricing and free samples and things like that.
So can you talk a little about your overall Amazon strategy? Did you just launch there specifically because it was table stakes and you're in the CPG space and that you know that that's going to help you grow as an online brand? Or do you have sort of a grander idea with or sort of strategy with what you do on Amazon specifically?
Yeah, so, you know, we really think of each channel completely separately. So D2C, we're very focused on subscription. About half of our sales are actually coming from subscription orders. For Amazon, I would say it is table stakes. It obviously has really large organic volume. And so you can launch on Amazon and get traction pretty quickly without spending a lot, which you might have to do on D2C to start driving traffic to your website. It's pretty high margin as well. Even though Amazon does take a commission, their fulfillment costs are so low that it's fairly profitable, you know, almost as profitable as D2C. And, you know, I think the key is really just to protect your brands and protect your pricing. So on Amazon, we claimed our trademark, which I encourage all brands to do, so that you can control what reseller is potentially selling your brand. And that also allows you to create a brand store. So on Amazon, you can go to our Cure Hydration landing page, and it feels a lot like our website. So there's a lot of education there. And that, I think, really helps build our brand within Amazon. Beyond that, I really try to sell different products on Amazon that we might sell in store. So one particular challenge with Amazon is that if you're not the lowest price on Amazon compared to, say, a Walmart or a CVS, you're going to lose that buy box. So another retailer or another product might show up in your place because you're not the lowest price. And so that can be, you know, a huge point of tension if Walmart or CVS puts you on sale and you don't have any control over that. So we really try to sell different products, whether that's different flavors or different formats.
Do you do product development specifically for Amazon, or are the things you put on there just sort of categorically different or than Walmart and CVS?
Yeah, just different than retail for now, but I do think that's a really interesting strategy. I was speaking to the founder of BarkBox a few months ago, and they have a really interesting strategy where they develop products specifically for Amazon based on what products are popular, what keywords are trending. And that's been a really effective strategy for them. So it's something that we definitely consider down the road.
So that goes, what is sort of your 2021 plan now that, I mean, there's no way that we can really make grandiose statements about what's going to happen the next few weeks, let alone months. But are you going to be going back into sort of these specialty retail areas? Are you focusing more on these mass opportunities? And like, what are product expansions?
Yeah, so we are expanding our product portfolio beyond hydration. We're developing additional flavors, but we're also developing additional functions. So we recently launched an organic energy mix with matcha, and we'll be expanding that line. And then we're going to be testing into a few other functional categories as well. On the distribution side, we're going to be continuing to focus on mass and grocery for now. We do have a partnership launching with JetBlue in May, where we'll be part of their first class amenity kit. So I think, you know, certainly once premium retail and travel fitness come back on the map, we're open to exploring those types of partnerships again. But in the meantime, very focused on mass and grocery.
Do you find you have to do different brand stories? Because you were in airports, you're doing this JetBlue thing. The average, the person who is seeking out your product in an airport has a different need than likely someone in a boutique fitness. And so you have to sort of explain in a different way exactly what your product is. Can you talk about sort of how you approach that?
Yeah. So the education is really focused on the importance of hydration and replacing electrolytes. You can lose electrolytes from a number of different activities, right? So exercising, traveling, if you're drinking alcohol. So those use cases are all very different. And obviously, you know, often a very different customer. Sometimes they're the same. You know, sometimes somebody who's working out is also going and having a couple beers afterwards. But I think it's really about contextual education. So marketing that specific use case in the context that it's in.
I mean, do you find that you have different kinds of customers for different kinds of online channels? Like, who is your average Amazon customer? What are they going for as compared to someone who goes to your DTC site? Is it someone who, like, do you, what is the context of those different channels?
Yeah, so we have a lot more information on our DTC customers. Yeah. We have two main buckets of customers. The first is what I like to call amateur athletes. So people who aren't necessarily training for a triathlon or a marathon, but they're working out a few times a week. Maybe it's getting on a Peloton, and they're using the product before and after that workout to help them recover. Another big bucket of customers is using the product for general health. And, you know, oftentimes customers will have medical conditions that could be, you know, a chronic illness like Crohn's or diabetes. It could be somebody who's pregnant. It could be, you know, even just somebody who's using the product because they care about their health and they're trying to hydrate better. On Amazon, you know, the information that we get is really more keyword based. So what keywords are people using? Usually it tends to be fairly specific. So it's, you know, they're looking for a no sugar added electrolyte product or organic electrolytes and, things like that. So, harder to tell, you know, like what the demographics look like, because it's really more of that keyword search behavior.
Do you, and if you do already, correct me if I'm wrong, but have you ever thought about sort of doing your brand storytelling in terms of the hangover aspect, given that that is such a big part and there are, you know, that's something that Pedialyte has never done, but people like in colleges knew about. Like, would you ever think about doing that or launching a new product with that in mind?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I first launched, I was like, okay, we have these two customers, athletes and hungover people, party people. And we honestly did actually try targeting both on Facebook. So had a number of different audiences that we tested. And, you know, people who were partying or going to music festivals was definitely like one of the core audiences we targeted. But we found that it wasn't as effective. I think there's a few reasons. You know, most likely if you are consuming a hangover product, like a hangover product, you're not going to subscribe to that type of product. Like, even if you're getting hungover like once or twice a week, it's not really like an aspirational thing to subscribe to. You don't plan on being hungover most of the time, right? Unless it's like a bachelorette or a bachelor party or something. And so the frequency of usage is much higher for a health or fitness use case. And so we just found that it was not an audience worth focusing on. Although if people want to use this for that, totally fine.
Can you talk a little about sort of how you've crafted your subscription program? Because, it, you know, you said that you try to drive most of your DTC sales towards subscription. So was that always sort of in the cards? Is that sort of how you see your margins being best when you have these recurring sales? Just talk about how you've approached that entire aspect of things.
Yeah, subscription was always the focus for D2C, really just because of the unit economics. So the price point of our product's pretty low. The average cart size isn't, you know, super high, like maybe if you were marketing for Casper or Way, where there's a higher price point. We really, you know, make our money on repeat customers. We don't make very much money if a customer only purchases from us one time. And so our main strategy is to drive trial. So get somebody to try the product on our website. We have a sample pack and a starter kit that we offer so people can sample all of our flavors and decide which flavor they like best. And really the goal from there is to convert them to subscription.
And where do you find your, in terms of digital marketing channels, do you have a specific channel like Instagram that you find to be most successful, or like where are you finding most of your customers coming from when it comes to paid marketing?
Yeah, so it's really been paid social and organic social.
Yeah.
So most of our paid spend is on Facebook and Instagram. We also have an ambassador program. So we work with a number of professional athletes and medical professionals who are driving a lot of traffic on our website just with their organic posts, and have found that to be really effective, just the general word of mouth.
Can you talk about how you've grown that ambassador program? Was that just by sort of people, you know, you and your network knew, or was it, you know, having meetings, giving them your product and saying, what do you think? Sort of how did you go about building out specifically like sports brand ambassadors? Because I think I read you have Andy Roddick specifically is one of your, is he an investor?
Or yeah, he's an investor.
Okay, yeah. I imagine that probably helped things too.
Yeah. I mean, we, you know, honestly, I just DM people from my personal account. Lately, you know, as we've grown our following, you know, we actually DM people from our Cure account, but I would just DM people and say like, hey, I'm the founder of this company. I'd love for you to try this product. I think you would really like it. Send them free product. And then if they posted about it or said anything around like how they enjoyed the product, then I would email them and follow up and ask them to join our ambassador program. So it's pretty like, you know, pretty simple and straightforward. It's definitely a volume game. So you have to reach out to a lot of influencers, but you figure out what those stats look like and then just determine how many people you need to be reaching out to on a monthly basis.
So yeah, how did you sort of figure that out? Was it just sort of you made a spreadsheet and you were like, these are all the people? And do you find that athletes are higher return higher or are better at acquiring customers than say a fitness guru on Instagram than say something else? How do you sort of like rubricize and grade everything?
Yeah. So the more niche the influencer is, the more effective they are. So, you know, we've had more success with a rock climber, for example, versus somebody who's just general lifestyle and wellness. It tends to be that if the influencer has more of a niche interest, that they have a really loyal following. We've also found that micro influencers tend to be better. So people with 5,000 to 15,000 followers, anything above that, the engagement rates just don't tend to be as high. So for us, it's really been about finding, you know, that sweet spot of niche influencers with really loyal followings and working with just a number of them across different categories.
And was it always sort of part of your plan to have that as sort of a core part of your organic marketing campaigns, to have influencers as part of it?
Yeah, that was a really, you know, we obviously tested it. We really tested so many different channels and found that influencer marketing was one of the most effective channels, I think, especially for these types of products.
And how do you, as you're growing and getting bigger and getting mass distribution, like, how do you scale an influencer program like that? Or is it just sort of that's the baseline and then from there you'll get bigger and bigger? Like, how do you sort of go about that? There are only so many people you can reach out to.
Right, totally. I mean, I think that's, you know, one of the challenging parts of influencer and affiliate marketing is how to scale it. We started using software to help us with these types of things. So there's a number of tools out there that help you source and reach out to influencers and communicate to them in mass. So we're now using a tool called Impact Radius. It's an affiliate marketing tool. It allows us to reach out to influencers, but then, you know, any affiliate on the spectrum from like a retailing ad or a coupon website, a loyalty website, or publications like PopSugar and things like that. So yeah, eventually you got to use technology to really scale the program.
Absolutely. Do you find, do you focus a lot on those sort of affiliate channels? You can tell me, you're the expert here. Do they actually lead to sort of return customers or more just one-off? I imagine if I read about a product and I clicked buy, I would get it once, but I don't know if I would necessarily subscribe. But what do you see with that?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, with affiliate, you know, the spectrum of quality is just so wide. And so you really have to tier out your offering depending on what type of publisher it is. So if it's a influencer or a blog, you know, that content that they're creating on your behalf is most likely going to lead to incremental sales versus, you know, potentially a coupons website where they're just publishing your code. You know, we often saw this a lot at Jet.com where somebody would come to Jet.com organically and then at checkout, they would Google like Jet.com discount code. And then they'd end up actually checking out via a coupons website. So we could tell that like the traffic wasn't actually incremental. They were just really using that code. And so you just have to think of different sites in different ways.
And you mentioned that, you know, product, you're growing your product line over the next year. Do you have, can you talk sort of about what your goals are specifically with sort of sales, like market share? Like, are you hoping to get more sales from mass retail given the growth of that? Or is sort of DTC still on your number one on your radar?
Yeah, so we want to grow both channels and keep the same breakdown we have now, which is about 60% wholesale, 40% e-commerce. We found that that's a really good breakdown for us in terms of profitability and margin, but you know, also volume as well. So retail is a great way to grow your business really quickly, just because of the sheer number of retailers out there. But obviously D2C is important for us for our loyal customers and getting that direct access to our customers.
Do you think you would ever change or the format or offer a new product that is in sort of a different format, maybe an actual beverage, or do you think it's just going to be powder for now?
Just powder for now. I think, you know, this category has a lot of runway, especially as we expand into different functions. I don't think other formats are off the table, but, you know, certainly a ready to drink, I would wait quite a while. I think given how competitive it is and expensive it is to launch a ready to drink, we'd really want to make sure that we had a lot of brand awareness already in the market.
And how are you going about finding what other functions you want to expand to? Is that just based on the data from your DTC sales where, you know, you have so much first party data and you see what they buy, what their predilections are, or how are you doing sort of figuring out what areas you should invest in to expand beyond into?
So it really starts with customer research. We're doing regular customer interviews and surveys to find out who our customers are and what their lives are like, what other types of products they're consuming, and what other types of problems we can solve for them. So it really starts with that. And then we have a framework that we use. Any category or function that we go into, we need to have a product that's effective and backed by science. And so we look to see if there's any active ingredients or formulas that exist that we know we can make scientific claims on. And then we also need to use organic and premium ingredients. So, you know, oftentimes there might be a product in the market, but it's, you know, synthetic and there's not an organic version available. So those are the guiding principles that we think about as we're launching new products.
Got it. All right. Well, that's all the time we have, Lauren. This has been such an interesting conversation. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the Modern Retail Podcast, a show by Digiday. If you haven't already, please do subscribe and send this podcast over to a friend who you know would enjoy it. See you next week.